Football on Off the Ball.
With Sky. Watch Premier League, Women's Super League, Scottish Premiership and much more. Live on Sky Sports.
And you're welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through to five. This is Football Saturday. Remember, our coverage on Off the Ball brought to you by Sky. Don't miss that Spurs United game on Saturday Night Football live only on Sky Sports. You can text us 53106, tweet us at Off the Ball. We're streaming the conversation. You can listen on News Talk and watch us as well on the Off the Ball digital and social channels for Periscope, on Twitter at Off the Ball, YouTube, Facebook, and on the OTB Sports app. We're joined by the former Republic of Ireland international David Myler, the football correspondent of the Irish Independent Dan McDonnell, and the broadcaster and journalist Johnny Ward to talk about the beautiful game. Already Arsenal have beaten Leicester 2-0 to go fifth in the table. We got Liverpool-Brighton ongoing now. Man City against Crystal Palace. Chelsea away to Newcastle. United away to Spurs at 5:30. I think we should start though obviously with Shamrock Rovers, Dan. Congratulations to them. They won the League of Ireland Premier Division title. How did they do it over the few months?
Yeah, listen, I don't think it's a
surprise.
A massive surprise. No, I mean, it has been coming for some time. It really... I think going into the mid-season break, there was a bit of chat about it being a three-horse race when Sligo Rovers and St Patrick's Athletic were in or around them. But there was always a feeling that I think Shamrock Rovers had the deepest squad, and I think that sort of, they had a rocky patch in the summer. Probably the regret they would have is around the time they were in Europe, and particularly when they went out, and then they went out the FAI Cup to Bowes, they were going through probably a bit of a sticky patch, and probably didn't play well enough around that time either. But I mean, they have been by far the best side, and even watching them last night, winning 3-0, Neil Ferrugia back fit, a young kid, Idemo Amaku, coming off the bench, who's involved with the Irish underage teams now. You know, he scored late as well. Listen, it's been coming. It's been a matter of when they were going to be crowned for weeks. And last night was the night. 7,000 people there. I was just thinking about it, starting the season behind closed doors. They won the league last year behind closed doors. To have a close to full Tallaght Stadium, and to be able to celebrate it with fans and stuff, it was a great night for them. But not suspense has been lacking from the title race, and I think for the sake of the league, it would be better, I think, next year if it was a bit closer. But nobody from Rovers is complaining.
We'll get to more discussion on Shamrock Rovers and Dundalk and the underage setup after 4 o'clock on the show. Jordan Henderson has just scored for Liverpool, your buddy David, to give them a 1-0 lead over Brighton in the Premier League. Mo Salah setting it up. And Johnny, Arsenal beat Leicester 2-0. They've gone fifth now in the table. They've got their act together there under Arteta. Arsenal, a clear shape to the team and a good victory against a top team.
Yeah, and just briefly on that Liverpool game, the irony is, like, Brighton absolutely cut them open in the first minute, had a great chance, really, really good chance, should have scored, and then Liverpool went up the pitch and scored. But yeah, I'm kind of happy for Arteta, because I think we were here, JD, after the Man City game when...
their last defeat, they haven't lost in nine now.
And things looked quite bleak then, but their fixture list improved after a very, very tough start, and just defensively today, they were really at it. Leicester threw a lot at them in the second half, but they defended with great will and clearly playing for the coach. And now they've suddenly emerged as definite. We'll spend probably much of the hour talking about Man United, but the way things are at the moment, you wouldn't put it past them finishing Man United, the form that they're in. And I'm happy for Arteta. I know he was under a lot of pressure, but you know, Pep Guardiola has always stood by him. I think Arsenal did well to stand by him, and they look a much more polished outfit today. They were very good in the first half. Really good set piece goal. They've been excellent from set pieces to kick them off. And
Gabriel, yeah.
Yeah, Gabriel, an unbelievable header. I don't know if you saw it last
night. Yeah, he just kind of flicked it, didn't he?
The technique, I mean, Danny Mandroyo's goal last night, I think, sometimes we forget how good it is to see a good header. And we saw Danny Mandroyo's last night was an unbelievable goal, I thought. But that header, you know, just the technique from it. And Arteta has them in a very, very good place at the moment. And they held out comfortably in the second half.
Good front runners today, Arsenal, when they went ahead. A bit like Frodon in the champion chase at
some race,
Royal.
That, JD. Some race.
Like, okay, so just to tell the listeners, we did, we'd come in and watch the race.
You like a bit of racing here on
I was like, we have
this
to.
This panel is loaded towards liking horse racing, so it's they're not reflective of general society, is it?
But I did say we have to mention it, and Dan made the gag that, well, if there's anyone to, like, literally barge it into a conversation, it's you, but JD, you've
You got to do it smoothly, Johnny.
Yeah. It was an unbelievable
suggestion
race.
Is that Johnny would not have done it smoothly.
people are not interested in horse racing. There's a massive narrative to this because Frodon is heavily associated with Bryony Frost, who has become an extremely successful female jumps jockey in Britain. But in recent sort of weeks, there's been a lot in the papers about the fact that she brought up a claim against a male member of the weighing room. And it's been very, very controversial. There's kind of people have sided with one way or the other, or neither. And that win today, I'd say she got a hell of a reception at Down Royal.
Absolutely, beat Manella Indo and Galvin, who's also running well. So I'm sorry if we've just peppered a bit of race into the conversation for the football fans. But David Myler, we have to pepper some Gaelic games in there as well for you, because it's out. The book is out.
Family. Have you read it?
Not yet. I'm waiting for my signed copy in the post, David, as are the lads here in the studio. Your sporting journey with your dad, John, a family memoir, Fintan O'Toole from the 42 involved as well. So congratulations. Mm-hmm. Did you enjoy doing it?
I did. I loved it. Of course, it was probably the only downside to it is we did it over Zoom, obviously with COVID restrictions. Myself and Fintan, I think we had probably 11, 12 Zoom sessions for about an hour and a half, 2 hours. It was just refreshing to kind of take trips, you know, back down memory lane, go over stories, go back over what I've done in my career, and, you know, to relive my childhood almost. It was really enjoyable. The only shame was, like I said, was doing it over Zoom.
What did you want to get across to the reader, David?
I suppose it's my story from a young boy starting off, you know, playing hurling, soccer, Gaelic, and then of course my father's stories mirrored side by side, and they come together later on as I start to get older. I suppose the big thing, JD, in this story is it's a father and a son, their relationship their relationship in sport and outside of sport, and how at times my father was like a coach and other times he was just a father. And I think that's the beauty of it, and I think, you know, families who are in sport could learn quite a bit from it.
It's a lovely idea, isn't it?
It is, yeah. There's a really good piece by Keith Duggan today in the Irish Times about it. You're talking about your relationship with Steve Bruce, that you got on very well with Steve.
Yeah, I did. I think most people are well aware of that, obviously, from my time at Sunderland, and then more importantly, probably my time at Hull, where we had the two promotions and FA Cup run to the final. I did. I think very fondly of him. He was very good to me. And, you know, it was a shame to see what happened to him, you know, quite recently. And I'm almost relieved for him that it's, you know, he's been sacked because it's over with. But you just see so many of, you know, the players who've played for him, so many managers and so many ex-players or whatever it may be who have worked with him and, you know, have had dealings with him, how they speak about him. You look at Alan St-Maximin, the way he's come about him. It was just a shame because knowing him firsthand, knowing, you know, that when he was a boy going to St. James's Park, that's all he ever wanted to be, was manager of Newcastle, and to be successful. And, you know, right from the off, he was doomed, really. They didn't want him to do well. And it was just a disaster from the off. And I'm just happy it's over for him.
Yeah, I was just going to say...
When you think about, like, what it must be like in Newcastle, to grow up in that city and to have that affinity, and for it to be so tainted in that way, sorry to cross it, and to be so tainted in his, if he's writing his memoirs, that this chapter will be pretty depressing for him.
Oh, 100%. You think about it, like, there's an emotional connection with Newcastle, with him. He's from Wall's End. You know, he used to go with his family and watch it. You know, he lost some family members during COVID and all that. It's kind of, for him, I suppose, the dream jobs would have been probably Newcastle and Manchester United, because of obviously his playing career at Manchester United, which I deep down, you know, he's probably not going to get the Manchester United job. So he gets the Newcastle job, and it's mind-boggling, the records when they compare to Rafa Benitez. It's just because Steve Bruce didn't take on Mike Ashley. He's not the one who's Rafa's lauded and loved up there, whereas, you know, Steve Bruce was the scapegoat, and he got all the abuse, he got attacked, and some of it was really, really bad. And it just shows that, you know, Twitter really is a deep and dark place. I know, Johnny, we've spoken about it in the past, how you came away from it and all that. It's hard to even talk about, because, you know, I get on so well with them, and I think a lot of them.
Yeah, I mean, you actually mentioned the St Maximum three, and that's, I was going to bring that up with you, David, because listen, we know there'll be things that players would say, and you know, gutted to see the gaffer go and stuff, and they might feel like they have to do it, but there was a real sort of sincerity in what he said, and you could see Jack Grealish and a few other people weighing in, like. And I guess, I don't know, is this one of the things about football? Do you sometimes see managers and how they're portrayed, even on social media, on the media, and is there a real contrast from how you see them behind the scenes? You know, because you saw Steve Bruce talking about how he's perceived, and he's clearly aware of how he's being pilloried, but clearly, like, do you always see the real manager in the cameras, or is it more behind the scenes you really see the real character?
Well, for you to even ask that would suggest to me that you've, like, what you're asking is probably is right, because the Steve Bruce I see behind the cameras, the fella, like, even as I've retired, the amount of times I've been up to Newcastle's training ground just to pop in, to see him, have a coffee, I have some lunch with him just to catch up, and he asked me how I'm getting on, he asked about my kids, my wife, everything, like, even for the, he asked about my dad, everything. You're going to see probably a more reserved person, you know, like, they don't want to be giving away too much on the television. But as you said there, the Alan St Maximum, like, that piece was huge, and then it was followed up by an interview after where he actually spoke, like, on live television about him. You said various different other players. I saw John Terry, Jack Grealish, all those. Of course, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying for a second Steve Bruce is the most loved man in football. I play with lads who don't like him because they, you know, they never got picked, or they didn't play for him. That's normal. That could be said about anything. You can imagine the boys who are playing, you know, your McTominay and Fred at United would be raving about Solskjaer, saying, like, well, he always picks me. Whereas Donny van de Beek might have something different to say, but that's just normal and that's football. But, you know, with Steve Bruce and the original question you asked, yeah, you don't get to see the full Steve Bruce. And I think a lot of people have been very... I'm trying to think what the correct word is, but their minds have been open, certainly in the way that, you know, the media has perceived him, and, you know, how managers and ex-players and players, current players, have come out and spoken about him. That, you know, it's good to hear, and it's good to see, because I certainly feel that way about him.
Just on the book, actually, I was going to, before we move on, maybe
Crystal Palace have scored
at Man City.
Yeah, 1-0. Now, with all these things, I always say it's subject to VAR, but Wilfred Zaha 1-0, and also Burnley 1-0 up against Brentford with Chris Wood on the mark.
How did you manage to get that into the book, David?
I was just going to say, though, you mentioned you had to do it over Zoom, and I haven't read the book yet, but so was your dad's chats with Fintan all separate, or was there stuff together? And I guess what I'm saying is there stuff that your dad has said that you maybe weren't aware of until the book, if you know what I mean? Little things and insights from him.
Yeah, well, my dad did about 10 Zoom calls himself, and I did my separate 12. And then at the very end, we had, I think it was two together, the three of us. So it was kind of very... He got my side, my dad's side, and then, you know, formed them kind of together. So, like, I suppose that was the beauty of it, because I didn't know exactly. My dad will have experienced so much with me. Like, there was obviously no need for, when my dad is talking about his days in UCC, you know, playing for St. Finbars or whatever, there was probably no need for me to be on those Zoom calls. But certainly at the times when he speaks about the FA Cup final, Ireland games, coming over to visit me in England, going to various different games. It was nice to get his side of it, because we always speak about, you know, certainly the FA Cup final one that kind of stands out was, like, we travel down with Hull, like, we get the train down, you're thrown on the bus, you're straight to the hotel, then, you know, you're kind of in that bubble where you're in the hotel, where we have dinner, we have meetings, we get to bed, we're up in the morning, you have a small walk, we're kind of in that bubble. And I had all my family, my friends there, and they all talk about, you know, meeting, getting, you know, the tube out to Wembley, walking up Wembley Way, stopping for a drink, having a bit of laugh and a joke with, you know, the fans, singing songs or whatever. So there was a nice balance between the two, and certainly, but, like, then Fintan was excellent at navigating them together, where they correspond each other very nicely, where it's kind of my piece and then it goes to his, and it shows two sides of basically the same story, but it's very well written.
This Liverpool game, Jay.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
It's just so much going on. And
it's frantic.
It's frantic. And the mad thing is, I don't know, David, if you'd agree here, but the loss of Fabinho, Liverpool have been very, very open. I mean,
they've hit the post.
But I think Brighton, yeah. I think Brighton's attitude to the game from the start was what's made this, I think, such a good game, because you can understand why teams might be a bit tentative going to play Liverpool with the attack they have. But you see,
they're going toe to toe.
Solly March had that chance within a minute, but even how they were pressing and really positive, but. As you see, if you attack against Liverpool, they can cut you open very quickly, but it's making for an absolutely terrific game.
Yeah, Bazuma with a shot with Alisson got a hand to, hit the post, and Firmino has just missed a good chance for Liverpool, who lead 1-0 after that early goal by Jordan Henderson. And elsewhere in the Premier League, Burnley 1 Brentford 0, and it is Crystal Palace 1 Manchester City 0 at the Etihad, with Wilfred Zaha on the mark. And Palace have been playing well under Vieira, and Burnley appears have gone 2-0 up now as well. In the Premier League, 5-3-1-0-6 for your text messages. Arteta's got the team playing well, deserves credit for sticking with it, says Jim and Shannon. And a United supporter, club is bigger than the result last week. Fully support Ole. Got the tactics wrong, too narrow, trying to fit players in, but nothing went right for United. Everything right for Liverpool. Let's see the reaction, says Dennis and Goey. Will they play Spurs at 5:30? It is the elephant in the room, I suppose, in football at the moment, David Myler. I'm wondering, like, you talk about documentaries that we had Amazon and Jose and all that kind of thing. I know there have been one done on Arsenal at the moment. You know, but Steve Bruce being a little bit different, and everybody obviously is a little bit different from the camera to the dressing room. I wonder how different Ole is. Fascinating to know, because you'd love to be a fly on the wall at the moment, David.
Yeah, I know you would. I imagine he'll be taunting about... He's probably in there harping on about, you know, the Manchester United way, the way things were done, you know, for years, the traditional ways. But at the end of the day, look, they need to find a way to, you know, get a result today. Like last week was embarrassing. They were carved right open. I couldn't believe what I was watching. Like Paul Scholes spoke about it on BT at full time, maybe after Atlanta, maybe a little bit at halftime, but here he spoke about if United come out and play like this against Liverpool or a top team, they'll be cleaned out, and they were. They just look like they have no style of play. You kind of they're almost waiting for moments of individual brilliance where Bruno gets the ball and carves someone open and puts Ronaldo in, or like you look at the Leicester game, Mason Greenwood gets the ball and sticks it in, you know, in the top corner from 25 yards. It's just that's the way United feel. But Ali's come out fighting, has said it's, you know, one of the toughest times. He said they've had an excellent week on the training pitch. They're working really hard. They're fully focused. I suppose come, what will it be, 8:15, we'll see what Manchester United, you know, have done this week and whether or not he is the man for the job.
Just in the immediate term, Davis, just to stop the absolute chaos, what formation do you play and who do you play, or who do you leave out? Because I know Pogba's obviously suspended.
Yeah, JD, it's a tough one. I probably look, if I was to pick it, you go Wan-Bissaka. I'm thinking Varane isn't right, is he? So you're going to go Lindelof and Maguire, Shaw, Sancho on the right.
Do you play Ronaldo?
I play Ronaldo, yeah. I play Ronaldo. I think the big one for me is I'd probably go Matic in midfield. And you'd have to have a firm talk with him to kind of like be that experienced one to sit. I'd play McTominay alongside him to add a bit of legs to get up and down the pitch, kind of give him that license to get forward a bit more. And then, of course, you'd have Bruno on the 10, Ronaldo straight to the middle. I'd actually play Greenwood right, Sancho left. I still don't think, you know, Rashford is coming back. I think probably needs another 2 or 3 weeks and a few more games under his belt before he's really pushing. You know, I'd be leaving Fred out, but I want Matic to add that control. I'm a big admirer of Matic. I don't know what is. Does he need to kick up the backside a little bit? But he's certainly, out of all those players that Manchester United have midfield, he's certainly the most defensive-minded one of them. You see the seasons he had at Chelsea under Mourinho, which was fantastic.
But Matic has gone at the game, David. Matic has gone at the game. Like, if you've Matic and Ronaldo on the same team at this level, like the lack of pace there, Matic just can't get around the pitch like he used to.
Yeah, but I don't need you to get around the pitch. I need him to stand still. I need him to link up with the two centre halves and a little triangle and hold the middle of the pitch. I don't want you out in wide areas. That's where I want my wingers and my fullbacks to get up and down the side. They take care of that side. I want him to stay in the middle and be that protective force. I want McTominay to obviously get up and down alongside him. That's what I want. Regardless of, you know, the legs he has, whatever, he has the know-how and the experience. you look at, you know, various different teams have done it over the years where they've, you know, that creative players drop back into the middle. If a player is intelligent enough, which I think Matic is, he can play there and he can add that control.
Where do you think it went wrong for them last week, Dave? I know it's a really, sorry, that's the most open-ended question. They were beaten 5-0, like, you know, but like at times last year when Ole would have played and McTominay and Fred in the bigger games, like they actually got decent results. And it was always this feeling that, yeah, that's what they would do to be solid in those matches. And from someone who's like played, you know, that position, you know that area very well. Like, why were they pulled apart so much last week in a way that maybe they wouldn't have been last year? I mean, there's a lot of analysis of maybe the pressing or otherwise further up the pitch, but what's your take on why they struggled there?
Well, the first and foremost thing is the press is probably is the problem. Ollie had done, he had spoken before the game after Atlanta. They played him on the Wednesday, didn't they? So it'd probably be in the Friday or something like that before in the lead up to the game where he spoke about where Manchester United were going to be on the front foot, we're going to take the game to them, we're at Old Trafford or whatever, and we want to excite the fans. Brand. The big thing about the pressing was that the initial goal, the Naby Keita one, when the ball kind of goes back to Alisson, like Bruno takes off, but it is Mason Greenwood reacts 2-3 seconds after he takes off. And if you look at the best teams, they're able to, like, they have a trigger point. It's like when one player presses, then you go, no. I agree 100% with Johnny said. Ronaldo, he's still very quick. He's not going to be pressing. He's not. So in that case, United needed to drop down into a mid to low block and just leave Liverpool's back four have the ball and leave them come onto them and then press them. Whereas because Ali said, we're going to go on the front foot and we're going to go after them, players were starting to press and they were just leaving massive spaces. If you look at the Naby Keita goal, how easily Liverpool play around them and just pop the ball that you think like... Like, I spoke to Jordan after, and he said they all felt comfortable in the game. They were able to get on the ball and knock it about. Like, United never laid a glove at them. You know, it wasn't, they weren't in compact defensive shape, like, drop back, leave United's, you know, back two centre halves have the ball. They just kept pressing in different ways. And then, look, once you get, you know, give up space and you know, with
Sadio Mane, 2-0 Liverpool.
This is as good a cross as you'll see at any level.
But I was just going to say, so David, like, as you say it there, I mean, these Manchester United players are like, these are
well experienced.
Yeah, they're elite. Yeah. They're elite. Like, okay, we could talk about the manager, and clearly that's where the, you know, that's where the axe will ultimately fall there, right? I mean, I think that'll probably come there. But would you not be expecting like players of that ability to react to the situation within the game and recognise what you were saying there? You know, maybe things you need to do to address that, to drop back into that low block.
Well, if you think about it. Like, United lack characters of a certain quality, like in probably leaders in that team. Like, you can talk about Ronaldo. Is he a leader? I would say yes, but when it suits him in terms of, like, when it's going his way and he is the main man, I've no problem with that. He's produced, you know, look at his records, look at the goals he scored. Bruno Fernandes, like, came in and he threw Manchester United on his back for 18 months and was unbelievable. But then it kind of falters. If you look at some of the goals that United scored, there's a great clip of Ronaldo and Bruno have their, you know, their hands out, like kind of holding, kind of going, well, what are you doing? I don't know. Is it the one where Harry Maguire runs into Luke Shaw and the ball breaks and Salah rolls it in? But it's a case of, well, could you not run back and help? You know, that what kind of way, that desire, that hunger, there is a bit of that. And of course, you touched on the manager. Like, is he setting them up in a particular way that they're going to say, like addressing each game or each team you're playing and setting up the formation, the system in that way? You look at Tuchel at times where it's not been working. He just takes someone off at halftime. He switches around. That's an experienced manager with, you know, game knowledge, game management, who's able to make tweaks because he spots something's not right. He feels it's off. Like, you could see in the opening 15, 20 minutes, and well, in the opening 15 minutes against Liverpool, the game was over. It was gone. You know, Liverpool were 3-0 up and they kicked on. And, like, and you look at it, even when Liverpool were 5-0 up, then it was kind of a case of let's not, you know, commit bodies forward and get players injured or whatever. That's it.
But, like, in fairness to Ole, like, you know, much of last season, you mentioned Fred and McTominay and that, they've actually been quite competitive against what you'd call superior opposition, and some of the performances against Man City were very good. But like, this was so tactically inept. I mean, anyone, by all accounts, if you watch the Atlanta game, if he, and Scholes said this, if you pick the same team, like Liverpool picked them apart like they were playing a team in the bottom three. And what was interesting for me was the fact that his two of his marquee names kind of shamed themselves, really. Ronaldo should have been sent off, and Pogba's tackle was an absolute disgrace. Like, and his attitude walking off the pitch, for me, would suggest that...
It's over now with Pogba.
It's over. Like, Pogba, again, I completely agree with Paul Scholes. He should be kicked out the door as quickly as possible. I thought it was shameful what he did. It's very, very hard to be, at any level, to be playing in the second half against a team that's a massive rival and you're 4 or 5 goals down. But you dig in, you know, you show a bit of professionalism, and his tackle was dangerous, but more to the point, I think he let the club down so badly that for me there's no way back for him. And Solskjaer, I think he's quoted as saying, you know, nobody's bigger than the club.
Well, he left him out of the Leicester game, wasn't it?
Yeah. I don't know, like from today, from that moment on, he should be gone, to my mind. And I'm not sure he'll probably outlast Solskjaer at the same time.
No, I don't think he will. I think there's going to be 20,000 stories obviously about his transfer now, but I do think that maybe people have just had enough of it. And he, not the player that plays for France, obviously. There's an interesting article actually today about the Fergusonism that's at United. Jonathan Lewis written it in The Guardian, just about the fact that there's a reverence for Ferguson and the cultural reset that's required to move away from that and to move away from this shadow of this great manager who everybody was focusing their camera lens on last weekend, and then he's at the training ground during the week. And that Ferguson, when he came to United, it was all about authority. It was about smashing the drinking culture. It took the 4 to 5 years for him to turn it around and make them then eventually 7 years later league champions. But I just don't know why they can't just say, here's a phone, dial the number and ring Antonio Conte and bring him in and sort out that team.
Yeah, but the Fergusonism is very relevant. And when Matt Busby's... When he left the club, he was given, wasn't he given some sort of a ceremonial role where he was kind
he
of
an office.
He had an office.
He retained an office.
And subsequent managers were almost deferential towards him, despite the fact. And the Fergusonism, as you call it, is actually quite. I think it's quite. It's not balancing Man United at all. And the more you look at the Ronaldo transfer, the more it's a bit of a joke, and the subsequent comments that he made about starting, you have to start your best team.
Like, the real problem out of this for the Ronaldo thing, because say Conte comes in and wants to drop Ronaldo, you can't drop Ronaldo.
Well, he should never have been signed. Like, I think it's probably...
The brand?
Yeah, it's the brand. And I do wonder, like, there are some football clubs now where, you know, I do wonder with Man United, the hierarchy, are they really that bothered about how they get on as long as it's commercially successful, which it is, and they make the Champions League? Because, you know, the whole Ronaldo story and the alleged Manchester City link, which was obviously bogus, to me
if he'd signed for Man City,
like that would never have happened.
Do you think it was completely bogus?
If I know anything about Guardiola, yeah. if you can sign a player who literally cannot press at all, and Klopp would have laughed if you suggested. If Klopp were given money, he wouldn't have signed Ronaldo, because it's at this stage of the Premier League, at that level, it's become very apparent you can't carry a player who just can't press. And Ronaldo is 36. He's not going to get any better.
Is this going to backfire for United, the Ronaldo thing, David, in your view?
It's hard to say. I think he'll score a lot of goals. It's what they do against the bigger size in the bigger games. Will it backfire? I'll go no, it won't. I think he'll score a lot of goals, and I think he'll do good for Ollie, and he'll do good for United.
I suppose the question is, you see, what did United want from it as well? I mean, this is the whole thing tied in with the Manchester United ownership. Like, if they finish in the top four and Ronaldo sells loads of merchandise, is that probably a good business decision? Is that a good season? That's probably the concern.
That's probably the concern. Really.
It is, but I think that's the concern that some people would have. I mean, like, we're obviously, this is a football show, you know, talking about results and you know, how they compete. But I think when Manchester United, like, talk about Ronaldo or even talk about Paul Pogba, I think there's a ledger book there. You know, there's pros, there's cons, there's, you know, there's the costs, but then there's the profits of it. And there's the commercial value and so on. And, you know, Ronaldo, I would assume, you know, has paid back whatever a lot of what they paid for him in terms of some of the interest he generated in the immediate aftermath.
And, absolutely. And good. Look, so, it is good business from a financial point of view. Like, you look at worse business, it'd be Jadon Sancho coming in, spend all that money on them when they could have paid a fee for a defensive midfielder.
Defensive midfield is a big problem for them. Like they don't. Solskjaer doesn't now seem to know. I couldn't agree with David on Matic. I think he's well past it. Brilliant player at his best.
I don't think that's what he's saying. I think it's more a case of you need someone.
This is tonight. This is like ultimately about tonight.
With that experience, as opposed to being the answer for maybe for the rest of the season.
Fred and McTominay, is Fred the answer? Probably not. Their problem wasn't solved by signing Ronaldo, put it that way. They've other problems. And they were actually a very good defensive side last season, and now they're not at all.
There was a list when Barcelona last thought about this. There's time, isn't there? I've just got a message from Toby. I can't show you that.
Subscribe now to the OTB Football Podcast stream wherever you get your podcasts and download the OTB Sports app.
If Solskjaer is to leave, David, and if it's just a case of not if but when, who's best equipped to get the best out of these United players? Is Conte? Did you play against Conte's teams when you were in 5-6 years ago?
Yeah, I did, yeah. I played against Conte. They're well-organised teams. Look, it's still Manchester United at the end of the day if he was to take over. I think the problem with Manchester United fans would be the overall thing where Conte wants full control of everything with transfers in, transfers out, all the money. He likes that. He brings a whole host of staff with him. That's why he supposedly didn't go to Spurs. I think that would be a major concern because he doesn't seem to see out projects for a long time. And I think if you look at United, United needs stability. Certainly, you know, the lads touched on the Ferguson, where, you know, Sir Alex was there for 26 years, but then, you know, Moyes came in and it was chopping and changing. Solskjaer's probably, bar the start of this season, has brought that, you know, bit of stability, that kind of trust back, you know, that trust with relationship between the fans and the players, that I don't think Conte's the right man if Solskjaer was to go. The kind of way they need to go is someone with a long-term project. Someone who can come in and work. You know, United are quick to talk about, you know, the development of players. They've always had an academy player on their bench, etc., etc. So you're looking at someone who's going to come and see the bigger picture, who's going to be able to take them on. I don't think Conte is the right fella. I'd be looking at someone like Brendan Rodgers or Ten Hag.
Shocking error by Robert Sanchez in the Brighton goal, and just come off Mane's second goal, and it's 3-0.
If you remember the Gavin Bazuna, do you remember Gavin Bazuna passed the ball out from the back against Portugal, and Ronnie Whelan on TV saying you just do not need to do that, and just think where Gavin Bazuna came from there. This is a lot worse.
It's rolled across the 6-yard box to Sanchez on his line. He tries to pick a pass.
Oh, it comes off Mane's hand.
Mane, it does come off his hand.
Would that be going to be AOR?
They tweaked that rule. Remember, the rule was very harsh on the attacker for handballing it in the area, but
I don't think the ball should be played to him there either, to be fair. Like, there are two players pressing him. The ball doesn't need to be played back to him.
It's like a goal you'd sort of see conceded in Astro if a lad wasn't concentrating that hard in goal, if you know what I mean. But the VAR,
has that happened, lads?
It has happened. not this morning, I don't think, Johnny. Johnny played quite well. It looks dodgy, yeah. I mean, Sanchez is meant to be a terrific keeper, by the way. There's a great buzz about him. It's a handball. He's got away with it.
So 2-0 to Liverpool.
I think the rules are very harsh on the attacking player if the ball strikes his hand in the penalty box.
Manny's in a great place at the moment. So he's
coming into the team today.
Yeah, he's just smiling there. You know, the goal hasn't been given, but his form, like, he was one of them players, I think, last season, a bit like Salah at times, who did need a break. And Liverpool, like, they're so refreshed, JD, watching them. They're like the front three, the way they're playing, it's just as good as they've ever been. And Mane's really hitting form. We'll probably talk about it, but the African nations, it's if anything is to cost Liverpool this season, that will be it.
I'm just interested in what you said earlier on, David Myler, about Jordan Henderson saying that it was just easy for them. I wonder how many of the 38 games are like that for a footballer. And it seems from your conversations with them that he feels that they're in a very good place.
No, but it's not that it was like, it was
within
easy,
themselves,
but it felt, because look, Liverpool blew United out of the water by halftime, you know, and then, you know, deep down that Liverpool aren't going to concede 5 goals. Then obviously Pogba gets sent off, so they've got 10 men. So you think, like, it's one of those moments where you're in Old Trafford, you've got, you know, an extra man, you're 5-0 up, this is great. Like, we can knock the ball around, we can enjoy ourselves. And you know, there was good long periods where Liverpool just kept the ball for probably 40 or 50 passes. And that was the big thing. Like, in regards, okay, you know, they're 2-0 up against Brighton right now, and it could have been 3, unfortunately, for that handball. But out of the 38 games, genuinely, JD, you'd have probably two or three games that would feel like the United won the other day. Because the Premier League is just so frantic, and it's why we love it, that, you know, each team will probably cause different types of problems.
Okay, got to take a break. Just go through the scores. Watford nil, Southampton 1. So Che Adams has scored for Southampton at Vicarage Road. It is Newcastle nil, the leaders Chelsea nil. Manchester City nil, Crystal Palace 1. Wilfred Zaha on his return to the Palace team scoring at the Etihad Stadium. As we just said there, Liverpool 2, Brighton nil with goals from Jordan Henderson and Sadio Mane. It is Burnley 2, Brentford nil. So Chris Wood and Matt Lowton have scored for Burnley at Turf Moor. Earlier on, Leicester nil, Arsenal 2 with goals from Gabriel and Emile Smith-Rowe. In the Championship, it finished Fulham 3, West Brom 0. At the latest scores, Bristol City 0, Barnsley 1. Derby 0, Blackburn 2. It is Huddersfield 0, Millwall 0. It is Hull 0, Coventry 1. It is Middlesbrough 0, Birmingham 0. At the moment, it's Preston 1, Luton 0. Sheffield United 0, Blackpool 0. It is Stoke 2, Cardiff 0. Swansea 2, Peterborough 0. And an 8 o'clock start for Reading against Bournemouth. And in Scotland, Celtic 0, Livingston 0, Aberdeen 0, Hearts 0, Dundee United 0, St Johnstone 1, and St Mirren 0, Dundee 1. Do we have an Irish score somewhere?
Every Saturday, James McLean seems to score now. So then in League One, he's scored for Wigan against Burton. So I think he might be up to 5 for the season now. He's loving it at Wigan, and he's in great form. He scored a great goal last week, and he scored another one today.
11-4 on favourite Envo Allen has won the chase there, the 2 mile 3 furlong chase at Dan Royal, after Frodon won the champion chase. Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk is back after this.
Football on Off the Ball
with Sky. Watch Premier League, Women's Super League, Scottish Premiership and much more live on Sky Sports.
And you're welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk. John Duggan with you through until 5. Remember, our coverage on Off the Ball brought to you by Sky. Don't miss Aston Villa taking West Ham on Super Sunday, live only on Sky Sports. Joined by David Myler, the former Republic of Ireland international, Dan McDonnell of the Irish Independent, and the broadcaster and journalist Johnny Ward to talk about the beautiful game. You can text us 53106. Goal at Anfield, Liverpool 2, Brighton 1 now. Enoch Mwepu with a goal that looked like a cross, looked like a shot, but it went in, lads.
Yeah, I don't know what our opinion is about it, but it is one of those.
I don't know what opinion on it
it's rolled back to him. He's at the right side, outside the penalty area. There's a couple of Brighton players in the box, and you think when the ball comes to him, he's going to try and just hit this first time into the area. But instead, it sort of takes flight and goes over Alisson's head. And his celebration, he sort of made it look like maybe he might have meant it. You know, he didn't quite, they never laugh in these situations and go, oh, I got away with one there. Like, he could believe that he was having a go. I don't know, did you see it, David, from the ex-pro's perspective?
Signal lost.
I'm having that he meant it.
What's
I'm
that?
Not having that he meant it.
You're not having that he meant it.
No. Have you ever scored a goal, David, that you weren't sure yourself whether you meant it or not?
No. No, I've not. Luckily enough, anything I kind of went, I was in areas where I had to shoot. I think he's, for anyone who's not seen it, it's kind of that Kevin De Bruyne corridor where he's trying to fly the ball in and around. And I think he's just miscaught a little bit, put a bit of height on it, and it's ended up looping over Alisson. Like, it's great pace, and it's that's the one, isn't it, Dan, though? You've realised you've kind of mishit it. It's ended up in the back of the net. Everyone's eyes are on you. You kind of go, yeah, I meant that.
You meant it. You have to just
go and zaggy on it, like, and celebrate it, like, you know, it's the best goal ever.
There's one angle from behind the goal where it looks like you could definitely, he'd be using that one and say, well, clearly he looked up and this was his intention. Yeah. He saw Alisson was a bit off his line. But it's good for the sake of the game anyway.
Sorry. Yeah.
It's been a cracking first half.
It has been. Brighton played good football. 2-1 to Liverpool at Anfield. 53106 your texts. Ronaldo was brought in to score goals. He scored 6. What more do you clowns want? Not his fault. Midfield and manager are rubbish.
Ronaldo hasn't done badly, JD. That's not the point, though.
Doesn't fit into the system of play, does he?
He scored a lot of goals at Juventus, a lot of goals, but they didn't necessarily achieve what they wanted to do when he was there either.
Most of them were inside the area as well.
So, I mean, like, of course, like, you, there is something in it. If you say Ronaldo's an issue, he'll make you look silly around 15, 20 more times this season. But I think the debate is sort of more nuanced than that. Like, of course he's going to score goals.
53106. Surely Ronaldo needs to be used as a super sub. It would be perfect for him. The irony not lost to me is that it would be Ollie asking him to do so. Feels like history repeating itself with the Fergie shadow. Glory days hanging over the club was the same with Busby. Ollie's got no presence or purpose. A big failure to effectively utilise quality priority signings like Van de Beek and Sancho, says Tom. And as a Liverpool fan, do you honestly think Man United supporters would take to an ex-Liverpool boss in Brendan Rodgers, says Niall and Tala?
They probably wouldn't take to him. I'd agree with you there, but at the same time, did you think that Everton fans would take the Rafa Benitez?
Before the Watford game, they were doing okay with it. And then Watford happened.
Yeah, they were flying, yeah. But, you know, the Watford game was kind of a freak game. But at the same time, they took to him.
People have got short memories, you're right. People have got short memories.
I don't think Rodgers is as synonymous with Liverpool in the way that, say, you know, he's not someone who's an ex-Liverpool player who inflamed tensions over the years in that game. Rafa said things about Everton that were, you know, were going to come back to haunt him, whereas Rodgers, I don't know if he would stir the same tensions. He'd probably be viewed as, by some, I think, as a pretty decent appointment.
I'd like to think Rafa wouldn't have taken the Man United job if it were offered to him.
Why?
Because he's a genuine.
He would absolutely
Liverpool legend.
Like. He would take. Of course, he'd take the job.
Do you reckon?
Absolutely. Sure. He took the Chelsea job when they had those epic games in 04, 05.
Yeah, but it's not the same. Like Everton isn't remotely the same as Man United.
If Rafa, of course, he would take it.
I'm not sure.
Of course, he would.
Maxwell Cornet, who was really good last week, has scored again for Burnley today. They're having a good day, 3-0 up against Brentford at Turf Moor. Spurs in the United game at 5:30. David Myler, how can Spurs deliver a bit more certainty to their fans? Because 5 wins, 4 defeats, they've lost all their games to the London clubs, which would say something about fight. Nuno doesn't seem to trust anybody outside the first 11. They didn't make any subs against Newcastle. First sub came on against 84 minutes against West Ham. They didn't have any shots on target in the second half last week. And Harry Kane is just not looking like the player who was the top scorer last season and the leader for assists.
JD, I've no idea what Spurs do. They are all over the place. They look like a group of lads who don't want to play for one another, don't want to play for the manager. And you think that, you know, like you said there, Harry Kane, I think he's really throwing his toys out of the pram. I think he's really fed up. I think he was desperate for that move. And I think he just stayed round to save face, thinking, okay, you know, if you remember, Tottenham actually started well under Nuno. Harry Kane wasn't aside, then he's come back in and they've not kicked on. Like, Nuno's got to find a way to get them organised. They're shipping too many goals. They don't look like creating either. What way he goes, he needs to, you know, get Harry Kane on the ball in certain areas, get Heung-min Son running off, whether it be Lucas or Steven Bergwijn and those kind of players, because at the moment, you know, Spurs, they're a tough watch. I watched a bit of, you know, the West Ham game, and you look at West Ham are flying. They look very creative. They look like a team who know what they're doing, whereas Spurs are the complete opposite. And, you know, today they're playing Manchester United, who are going to have a massive reaction, especially after the Liverpool result. You can bet it that United will come out. I expect United to win today, JD.
Yeah.
I know you're a Spurs fan, but it's just, I expect a reaction from them. I think, you know, last week's result, and I don't think Tottenham just have anything going for them at the moment.
How has David Moyes found a way to restore his reputation in management? Because you would have thought that maybe it had passed him by, but the job he's doing there is great.
I've been very fortunate, JD, because I did some presenting work where I got an opportunity to speak to Declan Rice and other West Ham players. And the biggest thing that all of them, the only thing all of them had in common when I asked them about David Moyes was the feeling of the change room and how he's brought everyone together, and how there's, you know, every player enjoys coming to training. They enjoy, and that might sound a bit strange to people, but are you waiting there for Laporte? They've been sent off. Someone going to jump in there. We've just seen that Man City are down. But I'll go back to David.
We don't have
David
that on the TV. Yeah, he has gone. Go on.
Yeah. But the thing was, all of them harped on about how great training was and how he's brought a bond and a togetherness between the players, the staff, the fans. Everything is, like, David Moyes is the glue holding that all together, and they're all pulling in the same direction, which is huge. And all those players are fighting for him. Like, I saw something silly on Twitter the other day that if David Moyes hadn't have managed Manchester United in the past, would Manchester United want him? No.
Good question.
Hasn't won trophies, though. I think for a club like Man United, one of managers going in there that are not yesterday's men, but have won trophies and proved themselves to win trophies. David Moyes, has he ever won a trophy?
Sure, if Fergie wants him, that'll be enough.
Well, I think that, yeah, it's a good hypothetical question, but it sort of feels like it's very hard to imagine Moyes now without imagining that time at Manchester United. And I suppose you have to bring yourself back to how he was perceived when he was leaving Everton, you know, and the sort of, he seemed to be on sort of the travelator upwards, you know. It's a good point, though. But it almost feels like the current Manchester United would never make that type of appointment now. As much as Ferguson still lingers, it just feels that they won't go that way. But
53106, Rafa would take the Man U job 1,000,000%. He's a decent guy, but always looks out for Rafa too, says Gavin. Well, we all look out for ourselves.
Of course, he went to China for, like, you know, I don't think Rafa is a great, you know, it's gonna,
he's definitely addicted to being a football manager.
Think very deeply about where he should go. I think most managers... How many people would turn down a job like that on the basis of club affiliation? I would say it'd be a very small number.
And also on 53106, why do you buy Ronaldo if you're not going to play to his strengths? Like, why do United not have the left back and right back overlapping across his bombarding into the box? It's not Ronaldo's fault. He's in a poor team tactically. Are Manchester City going to get beaten today? Because at half time, they're 1-0 down to Crystal Palace. Wilf Zaha with the goal. And also Laporte has been sent off. So City down to 10 men for the remainder of the game. Burnley 3, Brentford 0 at half time. Liverpool 2, Brighton 1. Newcastle 0, Chelsea 0. Watford 0, Southampton 1 earlier on. Leicester 0, Arsenal 2 in the Championship. Fulham 3, West Brom 0 as a result. Half-time scores, Bristol City 2, Barnsley 1. Derby 0, Blackburn 2. Huddersfield 0, Millwall 0. Hull 0, Coventry 1. Middlesbrough 0, Birmingham 0. At the moment in stoppage time, it is Preston 2, Luton 0. Sheffield United 0, Blackpool 0. Stoke 2, Cardiff 0. And Swansea 3, Peterborough 0. And in Scotland, Celtic 0, Livingston 0 at half-time. Aberdeen 0, Hearts 1. Dundee United 0, St Johnstone 1. And also we have St Mirren 0, Dundee FC 1. And in La Liga, Real Madrid have won 2-1 away to Elche. That is in the Spanish League. And we're going to have Off the Ball Saturday with the football chat with David Myler, Dan McDonald and Johnny Ward between now and 4 after the break. Shamrock Rovers winning the League of Ireland title and a lot more from the Premier League. We're back after this.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Sky. Watch Premier League, Women's Super League, Scottish Premiership and much more live on Sky Sports.
And welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through until 5. Remember, our football coverage brought to you on Off the Ball by Sky. Don't miss Aston Villa take on West Ham on Super Sunday live only on Sky Sports. We're joined by David Myler, the former Republic of Ireland international, Dan McDonald of the Irish Independent, and the broadcaster and journalist Johnny Ward to speak about football. You can text us 53106, tweet us at Off the Ball. We're streaming conversation as well, so watch us on the digital and social channels for Periscope and Twitter at Off the Ball, YouTube, Facebook, and on the OTB Sports app, as well as listening on News Talk. Just to give you the scores in the Premier League earlier on, Leicester 0, Arsenal 2, a result. Burnley 3, Brentford 0 at halftime, Liverpool 2, Brighton 1. Manchester City 0, Crystal Palace 1 with Laporte sent off, and Newcastle 0, Chelsea 0, and Watford 0, Southampton 1. Spurs Man United kicks off at 5:30. There was just during the week a bit of controversy, David Myler, about Tauchin and legislation and the timing mainly of legislation for the Portugal-Ireland game, which is coming up and which is a sellout. And what puts put out to the listeners out there, 53106, the moral question over ticket touting, I think there's generally a feeling and an agreement to most people that setting is very distasteful and now going to be illegal. But buying, anybody out there who's paid over the odds for a ticket, didn't regret it, or those who felt bad about it, or those who think it's morally wrong, have you ever paid over the odds, folks, soccer fans? 53106. Do you regret your actions, or did you say, you know what, this was worth it?
Do you regret your actions, JD? You have a story to tell, don't you?
Well, there's two stories about touting. Switzerland played Ukraine in 2006 at the World Cup, and it was meant to be France-Ukraine, but France messed up in their group. And I only realised afterwards that it was a tout because they were looking for tickets, and then when you asked them, that was their way of then revealing that they had all the tickets. And then I paid face value for Switzerland-Ukraine tickets. And
you were still ripped off, weren't you? That was one of the worst games of all time.
It was possibly the worst game of all time in the history of football.
So which do you regret more, that being the game or potentially your participating in illegality?
Well, it was a goalless draw, and I remember Emirates Airlines was on the tickets. So I was young and naive back then, and then I was subsequently went to Brazil for the World Cup in 2014. used about 100 avenues to try and get a ticket. Thought I had tickets. The tickets fell through for the World Cup final. So ended up with a lot of cash with a friend going outside the Maracanã trying to see if we could maybe get a ticket because we were so desperate at that stage. But all the ticket touts were getting arrested by the military police. So rather than end up in a Brazilian prison overnight, we decided to just take it on the chin and watch the World Cup final in a pub outside the ground.
The great Johnny Lyons, wasn't
great
it?
Great Johnny Lyons, yeah.
So I bought tickets for an Adele gig. So I was going out with a girl and she was a fan of Adele, who certainly wasn't big at the time. And she was playing in, I think, the Olympia. And, like, I can't remember if she prompted me to get tickets. She probably did, as Salah scores for Liverpool. But the tickets were, like, 35 quid each or whatever. And I was not an Adele fan. Like, so I turned up, like, solidarity, whatever, you go to the gig. So I turned up outside and I'm on Dame Street. And
it's offside.
Offside. I was being offered like 800 quid each for the tickets. Went to the gig and yeah, thought about that a lot since.
You did the right thing though, Johnny. You did the right thing.
Who was offering? Sorry, people were...
Touts were offering massive money for tickets. Adele had exploded and like the Olympia isn't obviously that big of a venue. So Adele in the intervening time, so must have bought it well in advance. And just, yeah. Just
probably to the stage now because she's such a worldwide figure that the ticket is probably worth, the stub is probably worth 800 quid at this stage.
Don't have the stub.
Oh, okay.
And we broke up afterwards.
Do you have any comparable stories, David Myler, about tickets? You must have got plagued for tickets during your career.
Oh, plagued, yeah. I still get plagued for people. But it's not usually the teams I played for or Ireland. Man United played Liverpool, obviously, last week, as we talked about. Probably 10 or 12 texts saying, could I get them four tickets, five tickets? Got flights booked from Ireland coming over. Can't get tickets. Can you sort this out? All stuff like that. Constant, all the time. And you know what? It's quite difficult to get two tickets myself. I'm usually okay to guarantee one for me, but getting another ticket is quite difficult. Certainly with the big teams like United, Liverpool, whatever, they're always sold out. Over the years, yeah. I've had people for various different things. I've had people ask me for Super Bowl, Champions League finals between like Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid, back as far as that. Could I get tickets for them for that? I suppose people are chancing their arm. But going back to the original question you asked, I've never paid over the price for a ticket anyway, so I'm fortunate enough.
I still haven't. I was prepared to do for the World Cup final, but I've never paid over.
John, you're not on trial here. It's okay. Yeah, let's to be clear. Nothing you say here is going to be used as evidence.
There's only 109,000 and probably more people listening out to this.
Well, interesting one for the listeners. If like, how many people who haven't tickets for the Portugal game would pay double the asking price outside the ground in the night?
Did you see the price some of the tickets were going for? Listen, you know, presuming all the screenshots of the third-party website stuff was legit. Like, I know Ireland-Portugal is a really big match. I'm really excited about the match. You know, great occasion, but sort of up to like 400 quid a pop in some cases.
What did you get in the end for them?
I'm really uneasy about though seeing that kind of thing. Ireland, I mean, like all Ireland tickets, I really feel uneasy about it. Seeing this stuff online, I don't know. Maybe when you're abroad, maybe it's a different thing. The buying thing ultimately is up to the person who buys, and if they get done by barcodes and they get it's a dud, that's your problem. I think the selling thing obviously is very, you know, it's very wrong. But look, it's market forces. That's just my view. Listeners texting in here on 53106, paid 1,000 for two tickets. Liverpool 4, Barcelona 0, best night of my life. €2,000 for Champions League final 2006, 5 minutes before kickoff, says Martin. I would expect he's an Arsenal fan. Paid €120 for Portugal tickets, felt dirty afterwards, says David in Rathmines. Couldn't care less about ticket tests, but supply and demand, worst things going on in this country.
There is an element to that, isn't there? Like, I used to get really energised by it, and I was like, you know, you're despicable if you're a ticket tout, but sometimes you see them outside gigs trying to flog tickets for under the face value as well, so there is that element to it, and it is kind of supply and demand, JD. You'll always get people who try to... Some people will smuggle across the border, some people will be ticket touts.
Paid £8 or punts for a two-punt schoolboy ticket for Ireland-Poland in May 1991 as a 13-year-old. Game finished goalless. Never bought another ticket above face value since then, says Chris in Carlo on 53106. I bought a season ticket for the Aviva, paid via Ticketmaster. Definitely regretted it. Not really a message about Taz, but I bought a ticket to the Portugal game as it's great to see decent football again, says Dave and Bray. And happy birthday to Stephen Kenny. 50th birthday today. Happy birthday, Stephen.
50.
And... it's interesting to see all the Irish players in England and James McLean scoring again today. Dan, who is Stephen Kenny looking at the moment? Who's impressing him, do you think? Who's he got his eye on?
I'm just thinking, actually, sorry, Stephen Kenny has basically now spent half his life managing, because he was Longford Town manager at 26, and even prior to that, he was Pat's under 21 manager. So, yeah, like it's. I mean, James McLean is one that he probably is one of the form Irish players at the moment. But I mean, unfortunately, the asterisk with it, as you say, is it's in League One, you know, and you would prefer if it was higher up. I see. Jason Knight is not involved with Derby today. He's picked up a bit of a knock. That would be a little bit of a concern. Nathan Collins, probably since the last window, Nathan Collins has been one of the success stories. He's been playing for Burnley, but unfortunately, Ben Mee is back, and Sean Dyche has gone with Mee and Tarkowski today, and they're winning. So Collins might have to. We're sort of not overburdened by sort of guys in terrific form. I mean, Aaron Connolly's not involved today for Brighton, so he hasn't necessarily put up his hand for inclusion. I see Troy Parrott was scoring in the Checkatrade Trophy, I think, during
the
week.
Absolute cracker of a goal.
But he's not involved for MK Dons today, so I'm not sure what the story is there. Jamie McGrath, it sounds like, is going to be back. But sorry, just to answer your point, JD, like there's a shortage of people absolutely tearing it up. I think some of the ones who are probably having really good seasons probably aren't ones who are necessarily going to play. Like Mark Travers is having a brilliant season with Bournemouth in the Championship, top of the Championship. Hopefully Robbie Brady can get playing there, but it seems like he's going to need a bit of time to get up to speed. And Bournemouth, to be fair, are sort of automatic promotion contenders, so they're not going to be using games to give lads minutes. So there's a couple doing okay. I mean, we're watching Shane Duffy play again here. He obviously sat out the Man City game because they maybe felt it wouldn't suit him, or wouldn't
2-1 to Liverpool
that day. Yeah, but he is involved for Brighton this afternoon. So I don't know. There's a couple doing okay. I guess, David, I mean, you'd be quite pally, I think, with James McLean. You must be happy to see him enjoying his football at Wigan. I mean, the last time he was at Wigan, he had a great time, but he seems to have really hit the ground running.
Yeah, and I think the great thing to see is probably that there was that frustration with him at Stoke, wasn't there? Obviously, he had the fallout with Michael O'Neill over going away with Ireland, and then it just turned bitter. That you're kind of like, you need to sort yourself out and kind of get out and get playing again. Then you go to Wigan where you get a new lease of life, and like you said there, I think that's his fifth or sixth goal. He's in great form, which is only good for Ireland. Regardless, like you said there, with the asterisks of it being League One, we need as many players playing week in, week out. It will make a huge difference to them. They come in and, you know, they're match fit. They'll be sharper and they'll be better. Regardless, if a fella plays, you know, 10 times in between windows in League One, or he plays 220 minutes in the Premier League, surely the 10, 90 minutes in League One is going to be better for them. Yeah, the standard's not as high, but at least fellas are getting minutes and they're getting game time.
Yeah, and listen, I suppose James McLean has been there, done that. Like, he knows. It's almost like Mick McCarthy, to be fair, when he picked Glenn Whelan when he was at League One. You know, guys who've played at that level know the level when they go into it. So it is more about fitness. I think Conor Harahan would be a bit of a disappointing one, that he's gone to Sheffield United to play. He was taken off in the first half of the game recently, and it was just tactical, which was disappointing. He's on the bench today. So there's a couple that probably Stephen Kenny would have liked to get minutes between October and November that haven't. So that would be the slight issue. I mean, Jeff Hendrick is, again, you know, Matt Doherty, some of the players who've done really well for Ireland in October, but they're going to be reporting in November having played very little in the intervening period, so that would be a slight concern.
Someone who's gone pretty much under the radar is Conor Ronan. Like, so he was apparently in a couple of his spells on the continent, he wasn't playing in the number 10 position, which looks completely his
position. He's with St Mirren now, just to clarify.
With St Mirren. So I'm just looking today, he's actually taken on Killian Sheridan today. They're 1-0 down at home to Dundee. But by all accounts, he scored an absolute cracker against Rangers last week. But by all accounts, he's dovetailing really well with Jamie McGrath. And Conor Ronan for Stephen Kenny's under-21s was absolutely outstanding at times. Like, real proper number 10, brilliant technician, but worked very hard off the ball. And we haven't really had a natural number 10 under Stephen Kenny. That's, you know, we're not even playing a number 10 really at the moment. But I think Conor Ronan is definitely playing his way into a squad soon anyway, and I think he's a bit of a blank canvas as well. He's a very exciting talent.
I think Kenny said he's got more to do, but he is one to watch. There's a couple of, like, Anthony Scully with Lincoln and League One, there's a couple of players knocking on the door, but I can't see them coming into the picture for November. I think in fairness to Kenny and his staff, it seems like they've probably hit on something in October, in the sense of they've built options and a bit of understanding around that system. And I think the squad will be very similar. But maybe in March, that might be the time you see one or two new names coming in.
This is Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk with Football. Between now and 5 o'clock, Liverpool 2, Brighton 1 in the Premier League. Still Man City 0, Crystal Palace 1. We'll speak to David about the under-17s in a moment. But just we'll touch upon last night's activity here domestically. Shamrock Rovers, as we touched upon at the start of the show, won the title, beat Finn Harps last night. I was reading your column there yesterday, Dan. There's a kind of a feeling, it seems, that they're respected but not loved. Is that accurate?
Yeah, on these type of shows, I suppose, myself and Johnny, like, we'd be sort of following our League of Ireland very closely, and you'd be sort of shouting from the rooftops about something very positive or something that's really good. But while the Shamrock Rovers team have won back-to-back titles, there's still maybe a feeling that there's more to come from them, that actually, to be fair to them, they possibly haven't even been pushed to the level that they can go to. And as a result, then, they haven't necessarily been like scintillating and sort of thrilling this season while coasting to the title. They've just been very good, very efficient, a lot of late goals in games, an unbelievable amount of late goals in games. I mean, in their first 10 games of the season, they got, I think in half of them, they got goals in the 87th minute or later that either turned the game into a draw or into a win. And that was the story of their season, rather than blowing teams away. But actually last night they did sort of blow Finn Harps away, and they do occasionally look very good, but there's a feeling that they haven't got to the level of maybe some teams in previous years. Now I think they would bristle at that a small bit, and they would point out that St Dundalk won 5 leagues in 7, and sometimes it was very easy for them and people weren't talking about, well, what does that say about them? But I suppose the issue, I think, now for any good Irish club, for any top Irish club, it's Europe. You have to do something really, like, really exceptional in Europe to make people stand up and take notice. And Shamrock Rovers this year, they had a reasonably good, pretty good opportunity to get to the Europa Conference League, which would mean they would have been playing this autumn, you know, on 6 Thursdays. They would have been on, you know, TV, all those matches, playing at a good level, and people would have got to know the team and the players a lot more. But they haven't done that. They've been knocked out of the FAI Cup, so they're not going to be in the final. And it sort of feels like they've just won the league, but it's not anti-climax is the wrong word, because no one involved with Rovers and none of the lads celebrating last night would feel that way. But it sort of feels like they've done something, but they've almost been within themselves to a degree, and they need to do a little bit more to be talked about as a great team or a team of the year. I don't know what Johnny thinks, but that'd be my view.
Yeah, I thought, in fairness to them, I thought last night they were brilliant, and it showcased Rovers at their best in some respects. I think what Dan is kind of alluding to there, it's more now, I think Rovers fans are thinking about next season and how good this team could be, because, like, I think the Neil Ferrugia story is one of the really, like, feel-good stories of the season. Neil Ferrugia is an incredible young man in that, like, what did he get in the leave-in, Dan?
Neil Ferrugia started and scored in Stephen Kenny's first game as under-21 manager when Aaron Connolly wasn't in the squad. And Ferrugia was thought he was one that was going to explode. I think he got, like, top marks in his leave-in cert, but he was expected to go very far in the game, but he practically hasn't played since then with a hamstring injury, recurring hamstring injury.
Yeah, he's interesting that he could play for Malta, France or Ireland, and at that point it looked like this actually will become an issue, because this lad could play for international level, like he was doing well for the 21s. But he developed this hamstring problem at, like, what age is he, Dan? Like 21 maybe?
22 now, maybe. 22. Think, yeah.
So he developed this hamstring problem earlier in the season, and he just couldn't shake it. And you knew that. I was at a game against Watford when Rovers beat them comfortably, but Ferrugia came on for a cameo, did really well, and his hamstring went again. And at that stage, it actually genuinely looked like this could be career-threatening for him, because he just couldn't fix it. And there was a piece this week where he spoke about how they went to specialists and they found a guy who
essentially, you know, he works in that area specifically.
He worked with Harry Kane, I think.
Yeah, in hamstrings. And he's more or less sorted it out. And he's now ending the season in really good form. And I'm really delighted for him because he's a player with massive potential. He'll probably commit to Shamrock Rovers now for the next couple of years. And the other good story, I think, is Danny Mandroyu, who's been really, really outstanding for Shamrock Rovers. I think, you know, Stephen Bradley deserves a lot of credit for getting the best out of Danny Mandroyu, because Bowes, for whatever reason, were not capable of that last season. He was out of favour. He's suffered a lot of abuse in derby games, which I think has been bang out of order. But he's risen above that. He was absolutely outstanding last night. And I don't think it's far-fetched to say he shouldn't be a million miles off the Ireland squad, the way he's playing. And he's a real, really, really good technical footballer. And I think one thing that I noticed last night, JD, was they brought in some players that haven't played a lot this season. Imaku, I think, is going to be a great prospect, and Chris McCann was gorgeous to watch last night. And players like Dylan Watts, I mean, you try to get lads who are not into the League of Ireland to watch the League of Ireland, and they're fed on a diet of the Premier League, and it's obviously superior. Anyone would enjoy watching Dylan Watts play. He doesn't play like an Irish footballer at all. And I think next season, if Bradley makes, you know, good signings and stays on himself, they'll be next to impossible to beat at the top of the table.
But I think the point is that they have the best stadium in the country. They have
great training,
the best squad. They have a really good training.
Are they the template then?
Well, I think like they have.
Dermot Desmond's gotten involved.
Yeah, like they still financially, like, I mean, they sold Liam Scales for good money in the summer. They've sold Gavin Bazunu previously. They've still got work to do to be close to profitable. Like their accounts are out there. You know, they've still got work to do. So you can't say they're fully the template, but I think they're on the way to being, you know, to getting there. And they would point out that actually, with their academy work, we had Graeme Gartland on our podcast recently, myself and Johnny, and he would point out that the first crop of Rovers Academy players that have been with Rovers all the way up are now coming towards sort of 14, 15 years of age, and it's going to be very interesting to see what happens to them, because Rovers do have some good young talent, and Gavin Bazunu was one of theirs, but some of the other ones have obviously been taken in from other clubs, other schoolboy clubs or whatever. So in terms of the template, that's a question, but I think it's hard to see where the obvious challengers are to them in the short term. Maybe Derry City, maybe St Patrick's Athletic, see what happens in a couple of other places. But I think Rovers, they won two leagues back to back 10 years ago, JD, when Michael O'Neill was manager, and then they didn't win another league for 9 years. And when they won two back in 2011, bookies were doing stuff about, well, they win 4, 5, 6 in a row, and they didn't, they disappeared. But I don't think they're going to disappear this time. But the one thing we're going to ask David about, I think, because there was a little bit of his history last night.
Gabriel Jesus has scored
1-0. But there was history for Cork City last night, where Cottle Heffernan, son of Olympians Rob and Marion, became the youngest ever player in Cork City history. But you would have coached him recently, David, with the under-17s, right? With Conor O'Brien's, and there was a lot of chat about Cottle. I know it's not sometimes fair to put too much pressure on a young lad too early, but he was away on trials around Italy and various places, but he's committed to Cork City. But tell us about him.
Oh, look, he's a fine size centre-half who's comfortable playing with the ball at his feet. You know, it's unbelievable, even as I saw it. I think if I'm right off the top of my head, it's
Brighton
16.
Brighton have scored! 2-2, Leandro Trossard. Sorry to interrupt, David. Liverpool 2, Brighton 2.
I don't know what's worse, you interrupting me or Brighton scoring. No, but look, Cole is a young player. I think he's 16 and 185 days.
Something like that.
Like, I know, look, you'll get the negative nannies out popping around, or the negative narcissists, whatever you want to call them, popping their things, going, well, it is, you know, the last game of the season. It's incredible. It's brilliant for him and his family to be involved, obviously, with the first team. Obviously, that's the, you know, the next stage in his development. Look, I got to work with him a few times now in the last few months in the international breaks. He and several others, they're exciting players. There's a good group of them. You know, even if you look at the senior team now, we had some messages from Jason Knight, Gavin Mizunu, Adam Ida, Andrew. There was a lot of messages from them, because they've all been in these young boys like Carl's situation a few years ago, and they've all gone on to the first team. So it's like the big thing for me.
What were the messages, David?
It's just various different things. What did the under-17s mean to you when you played? All stuff like that. You know, because all these young boys who played, they played for the Ireland under-17s. with Colin O'Brien, Ian Hill and Josh Moran, where they were involved and, you know, they qualified for the elite European championships, which is remarkable. And what's brilliant for us is we have these players now in the first team who are 19, 20, 21, talking about them playing 3 years ago. So these young boys are now looking kind of going, hold on, if I work hard and do well, then I could be up with the first team in 3 years, which is brilliant.
Can I ask, just from your perspective, what do you make of
just before you do, the Jesus goal has been ruled out for offside. So still Man City now, 0, Crystal Palace 1. So Palace still in front of the Etihad Stadium. It is definitely 2-2 between Liverpool and Brighton. Leandro Trossard with equaliser.
VAR is just killing goal updates, isn't it, John?
It's making it a little bit, but we always say in the show it's subject to VAR. So terms and conditions apply. We try to bring in the goals as soon as they go in. We're watching the Liverpool-Brighton game here, so anything we say about that game...
Anything could happen in this. I mean, it's just...
No, don't say that.
But sorry, Dave, my question for you was, from your perspective, because you spent, like, what age were you when you went to England?
Just turning 19.
So, from your perspective of being involved with them, like, what do you think the standards of the League of Ireland youngsters are like? Would you like looking at it in the sense of they'd be better if they were in England, and they'd be better coached, they'd be better prepared, and they'd be better technically, or do you think we're getting there in terms of the League of Ireland players bringing these young players on as needs to be the case post-Brexit?
Well, I definitely look at these young boys who I think, say if we have a squad of 20 of them, I think about 18 of them would be 16. Then we have a couple that are very late birthdays, like December birthdays. I look at them at where they are and where I was at that age, and they're a million miles ahead of where I was.
Really?
But we're very fortunate. Like the players that we have, say, are represented, like Shamrock Rovers, St. Pat's, Cork City, Club Kildare, Derry City. So there's a lot of the clubs are like, you know, professional clubs, obviously not Club Kildare or whatever, but in terms of they have a kind of a routine, a structure towards the first team, and they have a goal. Obviously we spoke, you know, Dan touched on it there with Cahill, like that is dripping down, that now I imagine someone, you know, a first team manager will want, you know, the under 23s, under 21s, under 19s, 17s, 15s, all playing a particular way to try and shape players to come through. That wasn't there when I was a kid. So that stuff is going on. Like I've seen bits and pieces of what Cork City are trying to do. Obviously they're in a massive transition, obviously finishing up the season, last night, obviously being in the first division, which isn't great for Cork City, but there's incredible work going in. And even in terms of that, I'm speaking about the League of Ireland teams, then you look at, like, even with the Ireland underage, there's a lot of incredible work going in from the 15s to the 16s to the 17s to the 18s to the 19s, which has been, you know, continued on. And that's why I think we're seeing a great burst of these young players getting into the first team, because the work has been done for the last 4 to 5 years, all the way from 13 to kind of 19. But that wasn't there when I was, like, you think I'm only 32. Like, if you go back, you know, 12, 13, 14 years ago, that wasn't there. That work wasn't getting done. But it is now, which is, you know, it's great to see.
The age group that David is talking about there, like the lads that are, I mean, Cottle Heffernan, as we mentioned, is 16. I think the fear is that at 16 to 18 is when they would be a big development age for some of them at their clubs in the UK. That team would all have left previously, or certainly a large number of them would have left, and we still don't know. The theory hasn't been tested enough to see, because Jason Knight and Amoba Badele and all the names that David mentions there, okay, Bazuna is slightly different, but the rest of them, they went at 16 and they got their last bit, their finishing school was at their club at Premier League or Championship level. And the test is to see now, will Cottle Heffernan and others be well served by staying here? And that's
the
question.
We talk about, like, the, you know, the Stephen Kenny thing. I think it's one of the most boring debates ever about, like, Stephen Kenny's job, which I think has been a bit of a non-issue, really. We don't talk anywhere near enough about, like...
That is the biggest gig in the country.
People feel that he shouldn't be the manager, so it is a valid debate.
Whether
that change should be made or not.
What's a million miles more important about Irish football is this stuff. Like, it's the young players of tomorrow, and the fact that David can say there are League of Ireland lads who at that age are far better advanced than I was in terms of my training, and that's very encouraging, because we've a long way to go.
Reece James has scored for Chelsea, 1-0 away to Newcastle. Jeff Hendrick not involved today. I'm not completely sure of the reasons for that. Maybe he's just been left out of the situation.
Fortunately, like, he's been in and around the bench.
Not even on the bench.
Yeah.
Watford 0, Southampton 1 is the latest score. Shea Adams earlier on for the Saints at Vicarage Road. Manchester City 0 with Laporte sent off just before half-time for denying a clear goal-scoring opportunity. Crystal Palace 1, Wilfred Zaha for Palace, who've been in pretty good form under Patrick Vieira of late. Should have won at Arsenal. Liverpool 2, Brighton 2. So Liverpool blowing a two-goal lead with a goal there by Trossard for Brighton. Burnley 3, Brentford 0. Good day for Burnley, and Maxwell Cornet scoring again, and Nathan Collins. And is he in the Burnley team today?
No, he's not. I was saying he's on the bench because me and Tarkowski are.
That's right. Yeah. And Leicester 0, Arsenal 2 earlier on. Jurgen Klopp was kind of a little bit anxious, I almost felt, in his press conference yesterday about Liverpool's defending, David, and with good reason, it seems, today.
Yeah, well, I think Jurgen loves building that culture, doesn't he, of everyone's against us. He wants that siege mentality where he goes into the change room, kind of, have you seen what these people are saying? Have you seen what Ali said? Have you seen what Thomas Tuchel has said? Have you seen what Guardiola said? And he always kind of comes out fighting with some comment or goes on about people. The big one he always goes on about is United getting so many penalties. He always goes on about that. It's kind of, he likes that kind of bring the change room closer together. Even I found it quite interesting listening to him, because I love that players are unhappy and they're moody and they're angry because it makes, you know, training better and all that and all this. He's certainly a fascinating character and a fascinating way of looking at it.
Yeah, a bit of a slip up if they don't beat Brighton. Well, the Brighton, very good footballing team. Fulham 3, West Brom 0 is a full time for the Championship. Bristol City 2, Barnsley 1 is the latest. It is Derby 0, Blackburn Rovers 2. Huddersfield 0, Millwall 0. It is Hull 0, Coventry City 1. Middlesbrough are 2-0 down at home to Birmingham. It is Preston 2, Luton 0, Sheffield United and Blackpool are goalless. It is Stoke 3, Cardiff 3.
Back from 3-0 down.
Yeah.
Cardiff. Yeah, they've scored 3 goals in, I think, 7 minutes.
Swansea 3, Peterborough 0. And in Scotland, Aberdeen 2, Hearts 1, Celtic 0, Livingston 0, Dundee United 0, St Johnstone 1, and St Mirren 0, Dundee 1. And just to let you know as well, folks, about the Cadbury Roadshow. Liverpool fans will not want to miss this. We're going behind the scenes at Anfield with legendary striker Robbie Fowler. We're also going to be joined by the Liverpool captain and Irish international Lee Fahey and the former Liverpool midfielder and physio Richie Partridge. All with thanks to Cadbury FC and their club partnerships, granting you behind the scenes access at the Premier League's biggest clubs, coming soon to OTB Sports social channels. We're back after this.
Football on Off the Ball
with Sky. Watch Premier League, Women's Super League, Scottish Premiership and much more live on Sky Sports.
And you're welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through to five in the company of David Myler, the former Republic of Ireland international, Dan McDonald from the Irish Independent, and Johnny Ward, the broadcaster and journalist. 2-2 Liverpool Brighton, Johnny, and Brighton had the ball in the net, but it was disallowed.
They did, and I don't know what the XG would be in this game, but Liverpool have just lived on the edge so much. And as Dan said, fair play to Brighton. They've not parked the bus at all, and maybe Potter deserves to be in linked with some bigger jobs, as you say, JD. They've been absolutely terrific. Like, they could have come here. Most teams in their situation would have come here and parked the bus, would have gone behind. It would have been a non-event. And it's terrific entertainment. And they're actually looking more likely than Liverpool.
The last 5 minutes, when Trossard had a goal disallowed, they had a good chance from a corner there. I think it was Shane Duffy with his head in his hands, because he probably knew he could have got a better connection on it. And you're right, it's Brighton asking all the questions at the moment. And
Liverpool's defence has been really poor, JD. I think that really is. I know I mentioned
Klopp was saying this before the game.
Yeah. Meanwhile, a couple of texts in on the ticket touts front from me.
Not going to blow up the radio now, are you?
No. I saw Adele.
Anyone else went to Adele? I knew there had to be an Adele reference.
This is probably like, I'm not going to name this this person.
Don't.
But I saw Adele in a small room in the pod, oddly enough, also with an ex. Tickets were €15 but went astronomically high. And the other mate sold my £3 schoolboy ticket for Ireland, England, Five Nations 1997 for £45. Went to the pub and got steamed. Ireland got annihilated. Best decision ever. Now, I was trying to work it out. I don't think he was a schoolboy at that time in his life. I think he would have been 18 or 19. But sometimes it actually pays to be a tout.
Mm.
Yeah.
If you're out there, kids, don't sell your tickets for Ireland, Portugal.
Don't engage in illegal activity or underage drinking. Manchester City 0, Crystal Palace 1.
That's probably the best disclaimer you've ever done on the show, JD.
Manchester City 0, Crystal Palace 1. Reece James has scored again. he's having some run of it for Chelsea, 2-0. Now they lead away to Newcastle. Watford 0, Southampton 1, and Burnley 3, Brentford 1. So a consolation, it seems, for Brentford. Liverpool 2, Brighton 2, Leicester 0, Arsenal 2, a result from earlier on. So interesting stuff in the Premier League today. The Irish women's team, Dan, I thought they were great the other night against Finland, a 2-1 victory, resilient, and just you just hope now against Slovakia and Georgia they keep it up.
Yeah, well, I think there should be Georgia. I think Slovakia is the game where they seem to think if they're going to make the jump from being sort of a team who surprises people to a team that sort of delivers consistently. I think the feeling is they need to win games like Slovakia. And they're set up now. I mean, these qualification groups, I mean, they're small groups, you know, and it looks like the pattern of the group is that Sweden are probably going to win it, and it's going to be a shootout between Ireland and Finland, provided Ireland beat the teams they should beat. So they've won away in Finland. So, I mean, they're in pole position to be in real contention for, at the least, sort of a playoff for the World Cup. And it's I mean, it's terrific because they completely blew it in the European Championships campaign. And there was a lot of question marks hanging over them, but you just look at the pictures and listen to some of the comments after that game on Tuesday, there's a feeling that maybe this could be the start of something for them. So they have two games in Tallinn next month, and I think again that they could become really good occasions and that they can make something special of it. So I mean, you're always worried you're getting too carried away on the basis of one game, but they're in a good position.
Mike Lawrence is at the new White Hart Lane, the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, for Spurs against Manchester United, a 5:30 kickoff. And Mike, I believe the teams are in.
They are indeed. Two changes for both teams from last weekend's Premier League games, and a change of shape too for Manchester United, who look like they're going with three at the back, with Rafael Varane returning in defence after injury, Edison Cavani partnering Cristiano Ronaldo up front. So Marcus Rashford and Mason Greenwood both dropped to the subs bench. Paul Pogba, of course, unavailable for the next three games after getting sent off after coming on as a sub against Liverpool. And for Spurs, Tanguy Ndombele and Sergio Reguilón stepping down, with Reguilón on the subs bench. In come Ben Davis and Lo Celso. An eagerly awaited game, with both managers under the spotlight after defeats to big rivals and in need of a win to appease the supporters. It's Spurs against Man United, kicking off at 5:30.
OK, Mike, thanks so much for that. David Myler, this is absolutely fascinating stuff. It looks like he's playing three at the back, Varane, Maguire and Lindelof, wing backs as it were, with Fred and McTominay, and then Bruno behind Ronaldo and Cavani.
I look forward to half as 5JD and see how it pans out. Look, if they go and they get a result against Tottenham, then it's genius. Otherwise it's a massive panic, you know, push of a button to kind of, you know, try and make themselves a lot more defensively solid. Like, how often has Lindelof, Varane played in a back three? How long have they had to work on it? I know Ali said they had a good week in training. I know Harry Maguire's played in a three at the back, obviously, from his time at Hull. When you look at the wing backs, are you used to that? Luke Shaw will be fine. Wan-Bissaka, we know his main attributes are defending, not going forward. And, you know, if you're playing three at the back, your wing backs are meant to provide the width, and they create, you know, they're the ones you want to get forward, get down the line, get crosses into the box. It'll be very interesting to see how they get on with it. Obviously, Cavani's there to provide those legs for Ronaldo to do the pressing. And of course, Bruno, he'll be the one to try and create something. It'll be certainly interesting to watch and see how United get on with it.
They're gambling, are they?
Well, it almost feels like that. To kind of switch straight to a back three. Yeah, look, they've been poor this season. They've conceded a lot of goals. But certainly they've shut up shop here and got all three centre-halves on. So it's a gamble, yes. But if they win the game, then, you know, Ollie's right and it's paid off. So it'll be interesting to watch how they get on.
5-3-1-0-6. Great to see Shamrock Rovers finish the season on a high. But the big negative is undoubtedly the massive disappointment of the season in the defeat in Tallinn. The club is clearly on an upward trajectory, but as we saw against Tallinn, still plenty of ground for improvement, says one of our texters on 5-3-1-0-6. Should Liverpool be concerned about today, David, or should we need to give Brighton a bit more credit for this 2-2 situation, which is nearing full time?
Liverpool should be beating Brighton at home. There's no getting away from that. But I think we need to give Brighton a bit of credit. like Johnny said there earlier, it was fascinating how Brighton were on, you know, the ascendancy constantly from the opening minute, trying to attack, and then all of a sudden Liverpool scored. There's just a few good factors with Brighton at the moment. They play lovely football if you watch them, the way they knock the ball around, the way they move. They're a possession-based team. It's kind of, you know, it's refreshing to watch. And I think you have to give them a bit of credit. And, you know, Liverpool, I think they need to do more. And I think it's a bit of both, really.
I think
what's
alarming, David, is that, like, the second half, Brighton have actually looked a better team than Liverpool.
Yeah, well, I've not been able to watch the same as you. It's kind of coming and going here. But the fascinating thing is Brighton have always kind of been that way. They do play open, expansive football. They've got great creativity, great movement. A real organized team that understands the manager's play style and what he wants from them, what's required from them. You look at certainly with the types of players they have in each position. They're very well organized. And then, look, Jurgen obviously has made some changes today, which hasn't paid off. Look, they've still got a few minutes left, so hopefully they can nick a winner.
And it appears that Jorginho's got a third for Chelsea. The first two goals by Reece James. James and Chilwell, they're filling their boots. It's almost like Alexander-Arnold and Robertson at the moment for Chelsea. They're looking very impressive because they had a little bit of a wobble, but they're playing top teams. They're playing, was it Manchester City and Juventus? They lost to Lukaku's out, but they go on and on under Tuchel.
Yeah, they're banging the title race, really. I think they're an extremely well-coached side. I do wonder, you kind of reference this, I wonder, does Potter get sort of linked now with a big job like the Man United job if it becomes available? Or is that fanciful to say?
Well, so one of our textures said Steven Gerrard.
For Man United?
Yeah, I don't think
Dan thinks he'd take the job.
Maybe. I think there's... I said there's exceptions.
You did say there was exceptions.
I don't remember that.
I think he's probably an exception, yeah.
Imagine
He is eyeing up the job he wants, which, in fairness, a couple of years' time, you know, if Klopp, whenever he does go, I think Gerrard's sort of trying to work his way towards it, isn't he? Mm-hmm. He's getting there.
I'd agree with that, yeah.
Roy Keane, he'd fit the bill at Man United. That'd be some crack, wouldn't it?
The best three months of our lives. Yeah.
Sorry, David.
Did you see that there? There was actually, it's been reported over here by someone that, I think it was Harry Redknapp came out and said it wouldn't be a bad thing for Ollie to bring Roy in into his backroom staff.
To play, is it, or?
he'd move more than Matic. I'd actually love to see him get the Cork City job at some stage. I genuinely would.
Get what? The Cork City job?
Well, where's his next job going to be, David?
Your guess is as good as mine. I don't know. I thought he would be, like, kind of nailed on for Celtic.
Don't think they give it to him.
No, but they gave it to... I'm not sure how to pronounce it correctly. Postecoglou.
Yeah, but the bad thing is they were giving it to Keane when he was Ireland assistant back in...
Goal is against Livingston, by the way.
2014. I remember Ireland played that game. I'm not sure if you were involved with it, Dave, against Italy it was in Fulham.
And around
that time, the real chat was Keane was potentially going.
What was he like to work under, David?
Who, Roy?
Yeah.
Oh, look... What you see is what you get. Mm. Very honest. Like I had a good relationship. He came to watch a lot of the games I played with Hull. He'd come over from Manchester. Obviously, he was involved with Martin, and he'd have to come and see how I was getting on. I was playing. It's the same with every kind of team, international team. They'll have their coaches, assistants, whoever going to watch teams and players. Like I knew he'd be at the game because obviously Roy was. Look, Roy is Roy. Everyone would know he was there and would kind of get filtered back. And I'd always ask him, how do you think I played? And I used to, like, obviously then he would be in the car driving back from Manchester, or from Hull, sorry, to Manchester, which would be the equivalent of kind of the red cow to Cork. Like, it'd be just over 2 hours. And often enough, he'd ring me and we'd go through the game and he would talk me, you know, things I did well, things I can improve on, things I didn't do well. And he was someone I respected and someone who understood me and knew when I was putting my weight and when I wasn't putting my weight, what I could improve on. I found him fascinating. Maybe I was slightly biased because I was from Cork and he was someone I admired and grew up, you know, wanting to replicate and wanting to be like. But he was very good in that, and he was always very honest. Some people could take that. We've seen enough stuff that's come out of what was said in different scenarios. But I had no problem with it because I knew he wanted the best for me and he wanted me to get better. But I really enjoyed it.
I think that's man management, like, and that's like he doesn't get necessarily much credit for that. That's like that's nice to hear because you come off that phone call feeling in a better place. Like,
there's great individual stories about Keane. I think the interesting thing, sorry to cut across, David, but the one theory about Roy as a manager, people have sometimes wondered, would he do better, like at a higher end of the game where he's working with like the best professionals, like, you know, the top of their trade, that maybe sometimes he would get a bit bogged down or frustrated by the deficiencies of certain players at maybe levels he worked at for whatever reason. And it is a fascinating one. It's hard to see it happening, but in a way, if you put him around winners and, you know, the guys at the top of their game, you'd wonder. You know, you'd be half curious. But
the big thing with Roy is, and if you watch any of his analysis on Sky when he's on, I don't know, I imagine he's probably on tonight. A lot of it comes back to, like, he talks about the basic, and it's almost little golden nuggets where he talks about, like, desire, determination, working hard, running back. It's not like I played under him, you know, where he was at Sunderland, obviously then with Ireland. If I gave the ball away, which I did, which everyone else did, it was never about me giving the ball away. Like, there might be a little grunt or a thing like, don't give the ball away because now you've got to chase it to win it back. But there was more of kind of, when he really came down on me and when he was really tough on me was when you'd give the ball away and you'd kind of go, oh, you know, you drop your shoulders, you wouldn't work to get it back. Or if one of your teammates gave the ball away. There's a lot of that kind of stuff with him, which is where I think what you're talking about, Dan, the frustration, I think that's where a lot of the frustration with him comes in. It's like it would have been fascinating to see him last week when Liverpool tore United open, to see him highlighting players to kind of go like, well, you need to be doing more there. You need to be doing more. And you're walking holding your hands. There's that stuff where I think when people make mistakes, he's not too bad. It's more about the reaction.
Okay. Sorry, David. Thanks so much for today. We'll leave it there.
Okay, guys.
David Myler and Dan and Johnny, thanks so much.
We're only getting going, JD.
I know, we're going to do another hour. And I've got to let you know as well, real upheaval in the title race today. Manchester City 0, Crystal Palace 2. Conor Gallagher scored late on for Palace. They're going to win that game. Liverpool 2, Brighton 2 in the Premier League. Latest scores, Burnley 3, Brentford 1, and Newcastle 0, Chelsea 3. 5:30 kickoff, Spurs against Man United. Looking forward to your company here next week as well. And just to let you know as well about tomorrow's show, we have commentary games, Norwich against Leeds, Richie McCormack and Brian Kerr calling that one. Then we're going to showcase Aston Villa's game against high-flying West Ham. Dave McIntyre in the commentary box for that. Joe Molloy is back in here at 1 o'clock tomorrow in News Talk between 1 and 7. It has finished Liverpool 2, Brighton 2 in the Premier League. That is a full-time score. Also, the Sunday paper review with Tommy Martin and Gavin Casey across all the digital and social channels from 11:30. We've got a ton of NFL goodness coming your way this week with the return of OTB Club Gridiron. It'll have highlights from the snap, reports from games, and also earlier bird tickets to events and more. So sign up now at otbsports.com/clubgridiron. Be sure to join us tomorrow for some great commentaries and conversations. Thanks to Dan and Johnny for today as well. And if you missed our Saturday panel reviewing the Sporting Week with Gavin Comiskey, Cliona Foley and Gavin Cooney, or any of OTB Football Saturday with the lads, you can find the podcasts of our content on the OTB Sports app. Search OTB Sports in your app store now to download the app for iOS and Android, or listen back wherever you get your pods. Thanks so much for listening today. Speak soon. Bye-bye.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Sky. Watch Premier League, Women's Super League, Scottish Premiership and much more. Live on Sky Sports.